Our fourth speaker, Joe Sobran, was born in Detroit. He's a graduate of Eastern Michigan University. Field was English. Since 1972, he's been writing for National Review and was named a senior editor of that publication in 1977. He is a contributing editor to Human Life Review. He is currently writing a biography of the many lives of William Buckley and a book about the First Amendment. He once made a statement, as I recall, that the greatest accomplishment of the Communist Chinese government was the stultification of 800 million minds. I wonder if you care to comment about the minds on this side of the ocean that they seem to have stultified. Joe Sobran.
Thank you very much, John. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm only writing, as a matter of fact, about one of Bill's lives. I'm reminded of a remark of his that I love to quote. He said that though liberals do a great deal of talking about hearing other points of view, it sometimes shocks them to learn that there are other points of view. I think of that often when I think of the Philadelphia Society, whose debates ought to be conducted on the op-ed page of the New York Times, as well as here. And that is to say that the real issues in our society seem to me to be located in the area of debate between libertarians and conservatives. I'm sure most of you agree. I don't think that the liberals have much to teach us anymore. And I know that I myself have a great debt to libertarian thought. It's not always obvious from the things I write, much less in the asperities I utter about libertarians, but it's time I confessed the truth of it. Not least since my own debt to libertarian thought has been increasing lately. Because libertarians seem to me to ask a lot of the right questions. Sometimes, however, I think they give illogical and false answers, and of course those are the kinds of things I'm going to be talking about right now. Tibor beat me to the punch by alluding to, referring to Nock. I think it's worth remembering that Nock himself opposed state power not to individual rights, but to social power. He said that state power was usurping what rightfully belonged to social power. And the significance of this, I think, is profound. We have, conservative and libertarian, tended to give too much emphasis to the individual. I find libertarianism to be valuable primarily in its questions and some of its answers about the proper limitations of the state. In some of its glorification of the individual, I find it to be more misleading. Society, after all, is formative. The very words we used, each of them, unless we coin our own, is a social convention. Shakespeare isn't possible until there's an English language with many thousands of words waiting for him to exploit. That's not to denigrate his individual achievement, of course, but it's to recognize that that individual achievement incorporates a great social achievement, too. The question often arises whether coerced action can be moral, and libertarians correctly point out that it really can't be so far as it is coerced. However, I think they err in reasoning from that to the conclusion that it is immoral to coerce. We do coerce in many kinds of situations, especially with respect to children. I don't hear even libertarians arguing that this is wrong in itself. Dr. Johnson said that mankind need to be reminded more often than informed. And in the education of children, as those of you who are parents know well enough, what you really have to give attention to is not so much the mind as the will. Not knowledge so much as habit. And that habit is formed by coercion, in part. Not exclusively, it doesn't follow from this that the state has to serve a parental role. I'm arguing the other way around, in a sense. I'm beginning with the family. I'm beginning with the most basic levels of social relationships and proceeding upward, in a sense, to the state. The state, obviously, should be much less coercive than the family. There are many fewer justifications for one citizen coercing another than there can be for a parent coercing a child. But it's not only coercion that society uses as a formative tool, but the things Tibor mentioned, rebuke primarily, ostracism, example, all sorts of things that have to do with the imagination and the will and the tendency of people to imitate each other rather than with sheer force. Coercion is a sort of backup measure for these things, even in parenthood. In a sense, all of us are children. I know that sounds Nixonian. I apologize. But there is a sense in which I think we're all helped, not only by rebuke, by the possibility of it, by shame, but by the encouragement we get from other people. And I think that a political philosophy shouldn't neglect this. The fact is that coercion, all these non-rational social influences undermine any vision of the individual as strictly autonomous. The individual is seldom all that autonomous, I'd say probably never as autonomous as he's rhetorically represented as being in some liberal and some libertarian literature. We don't say on that account that, let me put it this way, it's more meritorious to do the good autonomously than to do it because, say, you're encouraged to do it. We don't, therefore, discourage encouragement. Even the libertarians among us, believe in these social incentives, short of coercion. Now, there's a distinction that I think, another distinction I think needs to be made. For instance, this morning, Professor Rothbard said that in a libertarian society, each person is free to act upon his own morals and values. But he spoke also of the absolute immorality of violence, even when practiced by the state. The trouble with this is it seems to set up a double system. It seems, on the one hand, to suggest a kind of relativism about morals, as if you can have a unique set of morals, and on the other hand, to posit an absolute morality with respect to the state. I think the state has to recognize a consistent set of morals. I don't think the state should do very much in this respect, but I think it must do something. I think the state, to begin with, must recognize certain social organizations as authoritative, the family, to begin with. We don't treat the child as a citizen. I think it's simply not feasible to do that. Before woman suffrage, in a sense, the family was a citizen. The father spoke for the family. He represented the family the way a senator represents a state. I don't say we should go back to that. I say we should recognize, however, the principle involved, which is that the state can recognize not only an individual, but a properly constituted body. Now, people should be good. We all agree on that. It is best that the state not be the agency of seeing to it that they are good. But somebody has to do it. I think that the libertarian principle is valid when it, as it teaches us to differentiate among social agencies. I think it misleads when it suggests that coercion or non-rational encouragements are undesirable. It's better that the state do some of these things than that nobody do it. Whether there should be pornography, I think, can be answered simply. No, there should not be. How to deal with it, I don't really know. I would prefer, I suppose everybody would prefer, that it dry up voluntarily. It's more praiseworthy that people do it voluntarily, but we don't only want people to be virtuous, we want them to be good, if you see what I mean. We not only want them not to want pornography, we don't want pornography. And that is, if there's an objective moral order in which pornography is bad. So I say, better the state than nobody. And to say that it is, that in the name of human virtue, it's better to allow people to do evil than to coerce them to be good is fallacious. Thank you.